Okay, continuing our study on God's sovereignty at work. 1 Samuel 31, 2 Samuel 1 through 4, 1 Chronicles 1 through 10 is the text. And the aim for the quarter has been the student will recognize the sovereignty of God working to direct the affairs of men and nations in spite of inherent human weakness. And incidentally, this is the last in the series, and we'll be going into the Gospel of Mark. As you know, if you got your book, if you didn't, there's out in the underneath the youth bulletin board there on that table. This is lesson 13. Again, 1 Samuel, the text, 1 Samuel 31. 2 Samuel, it should be 1 through 4, I think. 1 Chronicles 10. Chapter 1, the focus on selected verses from those chapters, and the lesson entitled Judgment for Saul's Transgressions. The key verse for today's lesson, so Saul died for his transgression, which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit to inquire of it, 1 Chronicles 10:13. And the application for today's lesson, the student will understand that God will judge disobedience. So we'll pause there for a moment and this is chapters 27 through 31 of the book of 1 Samuel, and so I just want to do a little or a quick summary of those chapters before we get to chapter 31. In these chapters, 27 through 30 or 31, there's a back and forth narrative between the activities of Saul and David. But the common thread that runs through both is Israelites' war with the Philistines that's going on. Excuse me. In chapter 27, David was among the Philistines, fooling the Philistine king and striking down the enemies of Israel. Then in chapter 28, there's a, you probably would think it's kind of strange narrative or story of Saul seeking counsel from a woman with a familiar spirit who supposedly could communicate with the dead. Saul asked her to summon Samuel, and seemingly she did. But Samuel's message was not what Saul wanted to hear. It was not one of encouragement to Saul. Samuel said the Israelites were going to lose the battle that they were about to fight with the Philistines, and that Saul and three of his sons would die in the battle. In chapter 29, David has an anxious moment when he and his forces were aligned with alongside the Philistines to fight against Israel. And God wouldn't allow that to happen. He worked behind the scenes with the King Achish of Gath, which was one of the five principal major cities of the Philistine nation. And he worked behind the scenes there and worked on the heart of that king to send David and his men back home. There's a disagreement between the king and his top line generals, I guess you'd call them. They were not comfortable with David and his men fighting with them because they didn't trust David. In chapter 30, they found out David and his men, when they got back to the city of Ziklag, they found the Amalekites had attacked their city, they had burned it, they had kidnapped their wives and kids, and David rounded up his men and chased them, defeated them, defeated the Amalekites, who were one of the Canaanite tribes that inhabited the land when they came into the Promised Land. Then in chapter 31, today's lesson, Saul and Israel were defeated by the Philistines, and Saul and his three sons were killed as the David and what they, their activities, it's pretty clear. The Lord had forsaken Saul when he was heading to ruin. The Lord was with David and he was heading to reign as king. So, what are some differences you see in Saul and David through these chapters, but also the last 12 lessons?
David seems to go to the Lord more than Saul does.
Say it real loud.
David goes to the Lord for advice more than Saul does.
Okay. Good. That probably summarizes it all. But any other things that stand out to anybody else?
Saul had a vengeful spirit, whereas David had a forgiving spirit.
Okay. Saul had a vengeful spirit. David had a forgiving spirit. Okay. Let's go on to the outline first. Saul's death, 1 Samuel 31. 1 through 6. Second point, David laments or mourns for Saul. 2 Samuel 1, 23 through 27. And then thirdly, the end of Saul's reign. 1 Chronicles chapter 10, verse 13 and 14. Okay, Saul's death. Chapter 31 of 1 Samuel and verses 1 through 6. Verse 1 says this: Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. If you're looking at a map, the Sea of Galilee, this area that where this battle was going on was in the northern part of Israel, about from the Sea of Galilee, southern tip, maybe 20 miles or so down, 30 mile wide area. So Mount Gilboa is kind of in the center of that area, in the center of the country, east and west, and the northern end of the country, north and south. So the events of verse 1 follow those of chapter 28 and 29, after David and his men were sent home to Israel. And Philistines had left their camp at Shunem, and are attacking the Israelite army led by Saul on Mount Gilboa and towns nearby. Verse 2, and the Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. These three are three of his four sons. So the Philistines won the battle rather quickly. Many Israelite soldiers lost their lives, including David's closest friend, Jonathan. David and Jonathan had dreamed of the day when David would become king with Jonathan by his side, but that day would never come now. Also killed on this same day were two of the sons of Jonathan, were two of Saul's other three sons, Abinadab and Malchishua. The fourth son, whose name Ishbosheth, meaning man of shame, his name was rather appropriate because he was not on the battlefield evidently with his brothers. There's two details here that show how devastating this defeat was to the Israelites. I'm going to mention one here briefly, and then we'll pick the other one up a little bit later. But one was when the Israelites who lived in the surrounding area saw the defeat, then they abandoned their cities and fled and let the Philistines come in and take over. So if you remember right, when the Israelites entered the Promised Land and God divided up the land according to the tribes, he told each one of them, you're now to annihilate these Canaanite tribes because of their wickedness. And so they did that. They partially obeyed. But obviously the Philistines weren't gone yet. They'd taken some of the territory back, but not all of it. And so now, rather than going forward and completing the job, they let the Philistines come in and take some land back. So they lost ground. So that's one reason this was a devastating blow to the Israelites. Verse 3 and the first part of verse 4 says, "And the battle went sore against Saul, badly against Saul, and the archers hit him, and he was sore, severely wounded of the archers." And it goes on. "Then said Saul to his armor bearer, draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me." Uncircumcised being it was a common term of derision or looking down upon by the Israelites, looking down upon people who are not Israelites. So Saul, during the battle, Saul severely wounded by the archers, and fearing the enemies would come and capture him and humiliate him, he asked his armor bearer to kill him. The rest of verse 4 says, "But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid, very afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it." So when the young man refused, Saul literally took matters into his own hands and fell on his sword. Saul's suicide is considered by some to be an act of heroism, but Paul really should have found the strength and courage that David had to fight to the end and to not surrender. Saul's suicide was the ultimate expression of his faithlessness toward God at this time in his life. So Saul did what David refused to do. David said, "I will not raise my hand against the Lord's anointed." But Saul had done that. He had raised the sword against himself. And the other detail I was talking about that made this defeat so devastating for the Israelites was it was common to retrieve the body of a fallen soldier or king, and they didn't retrieve King Saul's body, his corpse, and that left him there for the Philistines to find. And when they found him, they decapitated him and hung him from the wall of Bethshan, a city nearby, to humiliate him and the Israelites. They put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, scripture said, one of their false goddesses. Then we come to verse 5. "And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died and his three sons and his armor bearer and all his men that same day together." So the armor bearer saw what Saul did and fell on his sword also. So on this one day, excuse me, a king, three princes, his sons, and all his men died one day together. So it was a dark day for Israel. So this is a question between each of us and God. Do you live in obedience or disobedience to the Lord? Then David laments in 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 23 to 27. I'm going to start in chapter 1 and just quickly go through the events that happened that takes us down to about verse 18. So 2 Samuel 1, verses 1 and 2. "Came to pass after the death of Saul, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had abode 2 days in Ziklag. It came even to pass on the third day that, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes rent and an earth upon his head. And so it was when he came to David that he fell to the earth and did obeisance. So David was sent back to Israel by King Achish, and he hadn't been back very long. He was a couple days, it says, he was beginning to rebuild and restore the city that had been burnt badly. So he was trying to begin the restoration process. And this man comes to him with torn clothes and dirt on his head, both signs of mourning. Verse 3 and 4 says, well, let's see, I'm not going to read all these. Verse 3 and 4 tells us when David asked about the battle, the man told him the truth. He said, many fled, many died, including King Saul and his son Jonathan. And so that was like a hit David like a ton of bricks, probably. If the man's report is true, then this news would be devastating to the nation, but also for David personally, because even though Saul chased him for years trying to kill him, David didn't look upon Saul as his enemy. And Jonathan was his closest friend. So this was going to be personally devastating to the nation and to David if it's true. So, verses 5 through 10, David pressed the man for more proof. And the young man divulged that he had happened to find an injured King Saul on Mount Gilboa. Okay, that's possible. And he said Saul asked him to kill him. And the man states, he admits it, that he is an Amalekite, who was the Amalekites were enemies of the Israelites. Unashamedly, the man admitted to taking Saul's life. He even had Saul's crown and bracelet to verify the report. But if we go to First Samuel 31, or ahead to 1 Chronicles 10, there's no mention of an Amalekite killing Saul. Both places record that Saul killed himself. He fell on his sword. So the Amalekite was lying. He must have got there before the Philistines did and been able to take his crown and bracelet off of him and know what the battlefield looked like. So in the process of scavenging through the battlefield, this man found Saul's body. And just from him coming and doing obeisance, bowing down or getting down on his knees before David, he must have expected David to reward him in some way. But David didn't respond the way this young man assumed that he would. Verses 11 and 12, the Amalekites expected David to be joyful, but David was not like an Amalekite. He didn't view Saul's death in an opportunistic way, as if this is what God has done for you. But he mourned for Saul. And standing before David was a man who, by his own admission, killed the king of Israel, even though it wasn't true. So David had him executed. Now, was David executing him, a man for a crime? Was David executing unjustly a man that had admitted to a crime he really didn't commit? Well, not really, not at all. Even if he was innocent of murder, he's guilty of lying, and lying was also a punishable offense under the law of Moses. And the man also admitted to being an Amalekite. The Amalekites were a wicked group of people, and if they'd done what God told them to do when they first went into the land, they would have been annihilated already. But Saul didn't obey. Saul nor the people obeyed. obeyed God in that. There's also the same group that attacked Ziklag and kidnapped David's family and burnt the city. And then David also asked this young man how he could kill Saul without fear. One of our past lessons, David said something about fearing laying a hand on God's anointed. And David had been in similar situations, but he didn't. He refused to take the life of the Lord's anointed, Saul. In verses 17 and 18, David didn't rejoice. He mourned. He didn't reward this man for this news that he brought. Instead, he lamented or mourned, and he wrote a song. The song became known as either the Bow or the Song of the Bow. And I think it's probably referencing the Jonathan's bow that had helped spare David's life from Saul on one occasion. And in this song that David is writing, he commanded the children of Judah to learn it. And the Bible says, verse 18, that it was recorded, the song was recorded in the book of Asher. The book of Asher was a collection of poetry poetry about Israel's wars, and it talked about the events or the battles that were won, and it commemorated the great men who had fought for the nation Israel. And David chose to have both Saul and Jonathan remembered through this song. And it was used later on, I read, as a national war song. Verse 19 says, "Beauty of Israel is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen?" This "how are the mighty fallen" is the theme line for this whole song of mourning for Saul and Jonathan. We'll see it again in verses 25 and at the end in verse 27. Verses 20 and 21 are the early verses of the song, and David prohibited the news of Saul and Jonathan's death to be sung in Philistine territory. He didn't want the Philistines rejoicing over the calamities of Israel like Israel did over their defeat of the Philistines. He even part of the song was he sang a curse upon Mount Gilboa of God stopping the dew or the rain because it was the place of death for Saul and Jonathan. So that brings us to verse 22. It says, "From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty." So David remembered how Saul and Jonathan were mighty warriors for the nation Israel, and they brought great victories to Israel. Verse 23 and 24 says, "Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives and in their death. They were not divided. They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions." Verse 24, "Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with other delights, who put on ornaments of gold on your apparel." So he reminds Israel that they ought to be proud to call these two men leaders. And reminds them of the success they had had under Saul's leadership, and commanded the women to weep in mourning. And as uh, this David is generous with his praise of Saul in this psalm. Saul, the man who tried for years to put him to death, and it showed David's forgiving attitude and gracious spirit. Verse 25, how are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places. So at this point, the song makes a turn, and Saul is no longer mentioned, only Jonathan from here on out. And the first thing he repeats, and this phrase is kind of like a chorus in the song, but he repeats, how are the mighty fallen? Verse 26 and 27, I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. Verse 27, how he ends, how are the mighty fallen, and the weapons of war perished. So to get kind of an idea how broken David's heart was, to know that Jonathan, his faithful friend, had been killed, had fallen, he uses the word distress in verse 26. And it's interesting that this same exact word is used in 1 Samuel 30, verse 6, to describe the state of David back in Ziklag when the city was burned and his wife and kids were kidnapped and taken away. And his people, I didn't mention before, but his people were talking about stoning him because of what had happened in Ziklag. And so it's interesting. You can put yourself in David's place or try to, and you can understand when they got back to Ziklag and saw what had happened. You know, much of the town burnt, their families gone. Now they put soldiers all came together with David. They pursued him, overtook him, defeated him, got back their families. But you can imagine his feeling when he saw that city where they had lived and his family is gone. That's the same word that's used here when he said, I'm distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. So it gives us a little bit more appreciation maybe for how deeply David was hurt at the loss of his friend. And notice as we've gone through this, in 1 and 2 Samuel, we don't find a single lyric or word by David that criticizes Saul. He only talks about his good points, his good qualities. And then he ends with, how are the mighty fallen? If you go back and go through the three places where that phrase, where we read that phrase in this lesson, there's an exclamation point after it each time, or at the end of the sentence that it appears in. So, not a question mark. And so, see, the importance puts feeling on the phrase. How mighty fallen. Can you describe a time when you mourned the death of a friend? Probably wouldn't take long when you could think of that. That would be pretty common, I would think. How about the death of an enemy? Not so common. But David mourned the loss of King Saul because he was the Lord's anointed. And then lastly, the end of Saul's reign. We're starting in verse 13. If we look at the first 12 verses of this passage in 1 Chronicles 10, it's basically the same as what we read in 1 Samuel 31, 1 through 13. The But then in verse 13 and 14, this is unique to 1 Chronicles. And it's a summary that provides a transition from Saul's kingship to David's reign as king. I'm going to read both these verses together. Verse 13 says, "So Saul died for his transgression, which he committed against the Lord, even against the word of the Lord, which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit to inquire of it." Verse 14, "And he inquired not of the Lord. Therefore he slew him and turned the kingdom unto David, the son of Jesse." So Saul died because he disobeyed God and he sought advice from this woman with a familiar spirit instead of talking to God. But it says he inquired not of the Lord. But if we go back to one of the chapters that we just quickly moved through in the intro, but back in 1 Samuel 28:6, it says Saul did inquire of the Lord, but the Lord did not answer him. So, looks like a contradiction, doesn't it? But it's not. If we dig a little deeper in that verse, the word that's translated inquire in both the verse that's translated where the word is translated inquire in both of these verses, if we go back to the Hebrew, I've been told, I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but it's interesting that when you go back to Hebrew, there are two different meanings. In 1 Samuel 28:6, where it says inquire, the Hebrew word means asking or making a request. So, pretty basic. That's what we would think of inquire is asking. But in this verse here, verse 14, it's a different Hebrew word. It means to seek with urgent care, and it even has a sense of worship. So it's seeking with the heart. And what it's saying is Saul did not inquire of the Lord with the right heart. His only motivation for seeking the Lord was he feared the Philistines. And he cared little about God's direction for his life. So to summarize, Saul's life was a tragedy. God gave him so much privilege and opportunity. He could have been so much more for the Lord, but he wasn't. Saul disobeyed the Lord. He lost the kingdom, and he wasted an opportunity to serve the Lord faithfully and receive great rewards. So, do you know people who have wasted their opportunity to faithfully serve the Lord?
Many people.
I'm sure you know someone personally. So that begs the last question. Who are you interested in serving? The Lord or yourself? Someone told me one time, all sins trace back to selfishness, which is serving ourselves. I want to read the last couple of paragraphs of the study guide, because I think the writer really nails the application here. This is on page 86 of the study guide. He says, Saul wanted to be great, not in serving the Lord, but in ruling people. He became jealous of his rival David, who was really not his rival. David was chosen by God to replace Saul as king, yet Saul would not submit to the Lord's will and serve him. Instead, he served himself. He did everything he could to hang on to his rulership and took his life in the process. When we're not interested in serving the Lord, but only in seeking our own greatness, it is a plan for failure. Even if we succeed by worldly standards, we're failures in God's eyes. Someone wisely said, any equation without God always equals zero. And I like what Dr. Gail Terrell said. He said it a little bit different way, and I'm not sure if I've got this quote exactly right, but he said something like, a plan for the future without God is no plan. And that's the same thing in another way, but God needs to be our priority. All right, let's pray. Father, thank you for the day. Thank you for the time we had to look at your word and to profit from the lives of Saul and David and the importance of obedience. And help us to learn those lessons and to apply them in our lives and to be a better servant of yours in the process. We pray for the worship hour coming. Pray for might tune out any distractions and we'll listen to your word as Brother Master preaches. Pray for Brother Pittman and Kim and the pastors in Brazil. Pray for this time of celebration of 100 years of ministry for BFM in Brazil. And pray that you'll help them as they seek to be a blessing to the people there and not only in preaching, but in teaching and counseling and ministering to the people, especially the pastors down there. Pray that you would be honored through their time there. Pray now.